Jesus' legal father. And then he continued with the story of Jesus' birth, which was told from the perspective of Joseph, because it talks about what he had in mind to do when he found out that his pledged bride was pregnant. So there was a legal connection already. So he intended to divorce her legally because he found out that she was pregnant, and he only knew that he was not the father. Last week we talked about how probably that indicated that Mary had actually told him she was pregnant and told him what the angel told her, but he didn't believe her. But the angel appeared to him and changed his mind about divorcing her because of what the angel told him in the dream. And so Matthew does not bother to tell us how they ended up in Bethlehem. We get that from Luke. But he mentions that Jesus was born in Bethlehem and clearly indicates that he lived the first 2 years of his life there. And there are these mysterious magi who then show up 2 years after seeing a star that they somehow knew appeared to announce the birth of a future king of the Jews. And we talked about that last week. We don't know exactly how that all came to be. But let's read that account again and then continue into the horror story that follows. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. Now see, the star hadn't been there the whole 2 years. The star hadn't been there, that, you know, it apparently hadn't been seen by anyone else, even in Bethlehem and in Judea. It was only something that they had seen, and now it reappears. So when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I will call my son." Now notice again that this is based on what an angel said to Joseph, just like an angel had told him that Mary was in fact pregnant by the Holy Spirit. So when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under. He had only intended to kill the one baby. But now he was angry, and so he did this in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. So this is where we see the timeline indicating the Magi, when they saw the star, and how that indicates that Mary and Joseph had moved into a house, or probably built a house. Joseph was a builder, and were living there in Bethlehem. So what is most significant here is the view that we see of the world Jesus was born into. The peaceful scene that we see everywhere with the angels and animals and shepherds all adoring the newborn baby is probably a little unrealistic in itself, considering, you know, that they're bringing a child into this setting, which is obviously not ideal. And so that had to add to many levels of stress that all first-time parents have. But even if they knew a little more than we give them credit for about the dangers of childbirth and infections and so forth, that was nothing compared to the realities of the barbaric behavior that was far more common in their experience than we might assume. This was their world, the world that Herod imposed once upon them. Again, the line of Herods that were given the title of king by the Romans did not have the absolute authority that the title might seem to imply. They weren't kings who could just do anything. They couldn't go to war. But they did have the authority to do just about anything they wanted to the people who were under their assigned authority. So imagine the horror of those parents of all boys 2 years old and younger who didn't leave. And so then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping in great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. What can we say that begins to express the horror of the incident? You know, the death of someone whose love we have enjoyed, you know, maybe for 65 years is a huge loss. And the sudden death of any loved one especially is devastating, but the death of a child seems to be the most difficult of all. And I don't think we can imagine watching our two-year-old being taken away to die, because it doesn't happen in our culture in this way, or possibly even being slaughtered in front of us, which may have been what they did. Well, Joseph and Mary were not the only ones who were waiting for the promise to Israel to be fulfilled. Every Jewish mother and father hoped and prayed that their children would live to see a Jewish society that was not subject to the whims of these kinds of rulers. And yet, even in this very act, Matthew sees this fulfillment. He sees two, actually. He sees first, the fulfillment, the escape to Egypt and the return from Egypt. Out of Egypt I have called my son. But then he also sees the fulfillment of the weeping. So after a few years, Herod dies so that they can return out of Egypt. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." Again, it is in Joseph's dream that the angel tells him what to do. So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. The children weren't much better than the father. So having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, warned once again in a dream, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets: he will be called a Nazarene. Now, like the Magi, who didn't know where they were going, they just took off to follow that star. Like Abraham, who was told to go, took off and went wherever God led him, Joseph took off in the direction he was told to go. But he was afraid to go back to Bethlehem or even Judea as a whole, when he was told to go back. And he again gets guidance from an angel, and again it is a part of God's curious way of fulfilling his promises. I mean, this is the lesson for us, and that is that delay is not defeat. When it comes to God's promises, just because they don't come true immediately does not mean that it's all over. Even retreat is not defeat. And that's really essentially what going to Egypt was about. But most importantly, we need to understand that even the most evil actions will not defeat God's plans. Joseph had a very good reason to begin questioning the promises and reassurances that he was getting, even in the dreams. And very often we have, you know, pretty good reasons to question some of the promises that we think should be fulfilled in our lives. And maybe especially when it comes to our children, right? You know, we had a friend in Montana that, you know, was insistent that the proverb that says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. You know, it proved that if he wasn't going the way you wanted him to go, you were not doing what you were supposed to do as a parent. Well, that's not exactly a promise. That's a proverb. And so, you know, sometimes we have these ideas that if we are just good parents, our children are supposed to thrive and do well. Well, it just doesn't always happen that way, does it? So I've often thought about the phenomenon of our desire for children in the first place. I may have mentioned this before in relation to Samson's parents. But having experienced the pain that only children can bring, why do we still want children? You know, there is a universal desire, almost, to have children. Well, Kirk Cameron observed that there is no joy like family joy and no pain like family pain. Well, Oscar Wilde said marriage is the triumph of hope over experience. Rather cynical view of marriage, but I kind of think that childbearing is the triumph of hope over experience. And I kind of really think that we're wired to be oblivious to the level of pain that we cause our own parents, you know, or even what we see other parents suffer, you know, and so we don't think about that when we start to have children. It just seems that a large percentage of people would not think that the risk is worth the pain. You know, because when we see our children suffer, or worse, when we see them behave badly, it's just extremely painful. Yet we are all children of promise. And our children are children of promise. We are sent to this world to bring it closer to what God created it to be. And that, you know, that's our purpose. We don't fulfill it very well. Our children may not fulfill it very well, but that is our purpose. And I really believe that we are given an innate sense of that reality. The problem is that it collides with other realities that are a part of our world. And so sometimes we begin to put more stock in those other realities that seem to conflict with the reality that we're really here to make the world a better place. So the question is, what should we do when fulfillment of promises is threatened? Well, the first thing that we should do is what Joseph did, and that is just to do what we are told to do. He went to Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod, and so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. Well, Joseph didn't know this was a fulfillment of the prophecy. At least I don't believe that he did at the time. He just did what he was told to do. And so here's another reminder. We never know when doing what we are told to do, even when it seems counterintuitive, doesn't seem like the right thing to do, but we never know when that's still going to be a part of our fulfillment as a promise to our world. sometimes the not so good things that happen to us, or the delays that we're forced to endure, are actually things that help us to fulfill the promise in a better way, because we're sent to someone else, we're sent to another place, or we learn some life skill as a result of that seeming lack of fulfillment. Most of the time, we can know and do what we're supposed to do. However, it is sometimes difficult to know what we should do, and sometimes we just don't have very much strength. So what do we do then? Well, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. "Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." Well, you know what? This Joseph had at least as many reasons not to want to go to Egypt as the first Joseph that we read about in Scripture, who was sold into slavery in Egypt by his brothers. He didn't want to go there. And it was no small thing, even in Jesus' father's, Joseph's day, to move to a foreign territory. Jews were not beloved in general, and it might have been a little like a Jew moving to Germany today, where even though they weren't under the same persecution as they were when they were slaves in Egypt, it still didn't seem like a place that a Jew would want to go. Okay? And so we know when we have to stay away from a place or a type of job or an activity or a substance or a person. Some things are complicated, and we don't want to go there. Most of the time, we know what we have been told by God to do. We know where we should and should not go. But sometimes, you know, we don't really have that much of a clue. And so it reminded me this whole thing of when Lou Holtz was coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. There was a good time when the Razorbacks were, you know, winning more games than they were losing. And they had a great team one year. It was before the playoffs, of course, but they were ranked a few notches below Oklahoma, who was number one. I think Arkansas was ranked number four or something like that. They had lost a game or two. But they had the opportunity to play Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. And Oklahoma was number one. Arkansas was hopeful that they could compete, you know, but they weren't picked to win. Well, about 2 weeks before the big bowl game, three of the Razorbacks' best offensive players, including their running back, were caught treating a young woman shamefully in their dorm room. Well, Lou Holtz immediately suspended them from the team. So everyone thought the Razorbacks' chances, you know, weren't great before, but now they had no chance against Oklahoma. Well, Lou explained, though, that they had violated his do right rule. Most coaches have a thick set of rules, you know, very explicitly laying out all of the rules for their athletes on top of the school rules. Well, Lou didn't do that. He just told them, the rule is simple if you want to play on my team. Do right. Well, you know, most of the time they know what to do, you know. And they knew what they were doing to this young woman was not right. Well, it was really cool that a fullback who was a blocking back who had never run more than a few dozen yards in a game before that, he stepped into the running back position at the Orange Bowl and ran and set a record, ran for over 300 yards. And Arkansas won the game. And that was great, but what was really the important thing that happened was that all of Arkansas, who was really not too happy with Lou Holtz for suspending those guys before the game, they were reminded, we were reminded, that we really know what we should and should not do most of the time because God has told us in one way or another. You know, he may have told us through nature, as Paul talks about in the first of Romans. It may be in the written word, or it may be through the example of this baby that was taken to Egypt to escape the fate of many other babies. So what can we do when what we have been told to hope for, we just can't understand? Well, we do what we are able to do. Have you ever thought about whether Joseph knew enough that he might have warned the parents of those other children? Well, there's no indication that he knew exactly what would happen. And maybe he didn't think it would be as bad as it was. He was only told that they're trying to kill his son. But other Herods slaughtered their own children and family members because they were afraid of the same thing, that they would threaten his rulership. And so Joseph might have had some idea of what might happen if he took Jesus. But the truth was that Joseph was able to save his own family, but there was nothing he could do to save others. Nothing at all. He just did what he was able to do under the circumstances. He could do very little to bring the promise to fulfillment, but he could trust God with that and simply do what he knew was right. And a lot of the times, that's all that we can do. We cannot control what happens, but we can control what we do. In 1926, a man named Rahman Bey enclosed himself in a sealed coffin and remained underwater in New York's Dalton Hotel for an hour, setting the first major record for an underwater burial. Survival, anyway. Well, Houdini was challenged by Bey to duplicate the feat. And Houdini loved competition, so he was determined to beat Bey's record. Well, in August of that same year, Bey did it in July, Houdini succeeded in breaking Bey's record by about 30 minutes. It was computed that there were 34,398 cubic inches of air. That sounds like a wrong number to me. But anyway, based on the computation of the cubic numbers of air, the oxygen in that air, according to the physicians, should have been used up in 3 or 4 minutes. But he emerged from the coffin looking deathly white and later wrote that he was very close to losing consciousness while in the coffin. But at 52 years old, Houdini was twice the age of Rahman Bey. He trained for 3 weeks prior to the test, lost about 12 pounds in the process. After two tests, the coffin was finally sealed, lowered into the pool. But what Houdini said is, the important thing is to believe that you are safe. Don't breathe deeply, and don't make any unnecessary movements. When we are threatened by circumstances out of our control, if we allow panic or despair to overtake us, we will fail to see what we can do and may even leave very little room for God to do his part, because we're off not doing what we're told to do, not doing what we could do. We're just in a panic. So the key is to do what we can, to trust God to fulfill his promises. So let's pray.